Welcome to the Quartering Podcast for Tuesday, the 27th of September. And first up, Rings of Power failure proves SJW Hollywood dead wrong on diversity.
It's another day, another round of copium, because the absolute failure of Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, actually reveals something pretty embarrassing for the Hollywood pundits and the purveyors of the woke ideology and the strong independent women who don't need no man. It's also interesting when you see how strong women are written by men versus how strong women are written by women. It's generally strong. I mean, just like She-Hulk, right? Galadriel, okay? You can be a strong independent female in a movie, but you don't have to be a man. And that's what they end up doing to a lot of these female characters. And the copium is absolutely plentiful in the far left leaning media. MovieWeb.com comes out with this 1 hour ago. No, the Lord of the Rings of Power is not ruining Lord of the Rings. The Rings of Power have been the center of a lot of love and hate. Just hate. Despite some claims, Amazon series is not ruining the Lord of the Rings. Now look. I've said this before, and I will say this again. If you like the show, you like the show. That doesn't make you dumb or a loser. You just like the show. That's okay. Also, you know, contrary to what some of my peers say, I don't believe the show is like absolute, total, irredeemable garbage. It's bad. I think that's undeniable. But if Amazon were to stick it out and really make the, I believe in my heart of hearts that Amazon could fix this if they fired all the writers and they changed direction completely in season two. They literally could do that. And it's something that you might actually see happen because you have so much money in a sunk cost, right? Sunk cost is like money you've already spent. You kind of write it off in your mind. You can't get it back. There's a fallacy. What is that fallacy? I forget it. Where like, you think you need to, people end up staying around too long because they have this, it's like a sunk cost fallacy, I think is what it's called. And then so Amazon spends $250 million just for the rights, then $60 million per episode. I don't know where, they don't have any extras. But nonetheless, they're spending this kind of money. At the end of season one, let's say everyone basically hates it. It's still Lord of the Rings. And if they came out and said, we cleaned house in the writer's room. We've heard you. We've heard the feedback. We're going to do what we need to do to earn the trust of the Tolkien fandom again. They would come back. People would come back. I am absolutely certain of it. And then you could look at the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth season of Rings of Power and laugh about that first season. You could tell people, yeah, it's worth watching, just skip the first season. They could redeem it. This article writes, now that Rings of Power has arrived and several episodes released to the world, there's infinitely different reactions to the show. Some people have praised the show's visual style and character work, calling the series a worthy successor to Jackson's Lord of the Rings films. Literally nobody said that. Some others haven't been so keen on the series, saying that the plot is too slow and that the characters aren't well written or performed. Both are valid takes. All art is inherently subjective. Oh, that's what we're going to go with? I don't think that there's a lot of people that you know, would like, oh, Lord of the Rings were objectively bad. I don't believe that you could make a case, a reasonable case, that Lord of the Rings, the Peter Jackson trilogy, was objectively bad. So no, it isn't all like up to subjective opinion. There's no arguing that the material Tolkien wrote is incredible stuff, whether it be series of The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, or other books such as The Silmarillion, The Children of Húrin, or any other of the stories of Middle-earth and Arda detailed in The Lord of the Rings appendices, Unfinished Tales, and other various texts of Tolkien's legendarium. The epic stories of Tolkien's writing are some of the most sweeping, meticulous, and truly defining works of the fantasy genre. That's the problem, though, isn't it? You could make the argument that Tolkien has done all the hard work for you. The problem is pure hubris. The writer is thinking, well, we know better than Tolkien, even though Tolkien's laid it out in chapter and verse for them, how to write these characters, what the characters are supposed to look like, how the characters are supposed to act. But Amazon said, we know better. I went to college at an Ivy League school. I got a degree in gender studies. I'm a writer on Rings of Power. They say it's still early. The show has already been greenlit for a second season. Well, duh. You don't spend $250 million just on the rights and say, well, we'll see what happens. You already commit, you're pot committed, to use a poker term. And the showrunners J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay have stated that there are five seasons outlined for the overall story. The Rings of Power is still in its earliest of stages. It's halfway through its debut season. At this point, it shouldn't be expected to deliver the same climatic excitement that is typically reserved for a finale. What? How did Game of Thrones do that every single week? Like, do you remember what it was like interacting with humans after the Red Wedding? Do you remember what it was like after every time, like, a beloved character got offed and everybody talked about it? Every episode of the Game of Thrones series, especially between episode one, or season one and, like, three, were like finales. It's unreasonable to expect the show to come out of the gates and immediately have the same effort and grandiosity that was built over the course of Jackson's three films. Are you joking? We've got over 6 hours of content from The Rings of Power. We are at almost the entire length of the trilogy, two-thirds of the trilogy. In fact, you could say we're through two of the movies. We're through Fellowship and we're through the Two Towers. Think about everything that happened. The battles. The storylines. All completed in 4.5 hours. Call it five, maybe six if you have the director's cuts. Okay, in the same amount of time. Now, I'm not saying that The Rings of Power has to be the trilogy. But all it does is make me want to watch the trilogy. Then you have whose sword fights better, House of the Dragons or Rings of Power? They had this wry smile, like, man, I'm so good at the sword, even though you've never seen me wield one before, but trust me, I'm a whammon. And you see this, we need to talk about the heartless Harfoots of Rings of Power. They are heartless. They're weird. It's like they want them to be cute, and they want you to member bury the hobbits, but the Harfoots kind of suck. You see, and the faithfulness is no doubt part of the why the depiction of the Harfoot clan is and Amazon's Rings of Power often seems so strange and off-putting. Granted, these are not the comfortable hobbits we've previously seen growing fat, content, and sedate within the confines of the well-protected Shire. The lives of the Harfoots are considerably more perilous. They've grown up with culture that emphasizes the hard choices that must often be made in the name of survival. But even then, the show's depiction of the Harfoot life often seems needlessly, even comically heartless and cruel. On a show that has often done visual justice to its unprecedented billion-dollar budget five episodes in, it's one of those nagging issues of characterization that makes Rings of Power such an odd roller coaster of satisfaction, confusion, and disappointment. Put simply, the Harfoots are uniquely awful to one another, whether that's on a personal level or an institutional one. The screenwriters, meanwhile, have made a feeble attempt to portray the heartlessness of the clan as a policy of survival, but the show hasn't done nearly enough to convey why a single adult's sprained ankle is treated as an insurmountable obstacle that the entire society cannot find a way to deal with. Instead, yeah, they leave them behind, right? Instead, the Harfoots have come off like a den of Ayn Randian zealots preaching ethical egoism as they try to sign the death warrant of an entire family, you young children in tow, rather than band together as one expects of, you know, protagonists. It's a bizarre choice, one that rings especially false in comparison with Hobbit characters we know so well. Is Rings of Power moving too fast or too slowly? What? Who on earth thinks it's moving fast? Rings of Power. Why does Galadriel never show her sword skills in Lord of the Ring? Because she didn't need to, because she's a powerful sorceress. And like elves aren't really like archery's their thing. The first, there was several several epic battle scenes that were removed from the final cuts of Peter Jackson's films. Such scenes included an amazing fight showing Arwen defending the glittering caves from a horde of orcs, and Arwen joining a fray at Helm's Deep along with Aragorn and Legolas. One of the biggest criticisms of the movie adaptations is that the portrayal of women lack valor, bravery, and prowess. What? Remember the I am no man scene? Pretty boss. Remember when it was Galadriel, right? Summoned the water that came down as like stallions and protected the hobbits. I need to rewatch that trilogy. I just watched Rings of Power and now I want to quit. Tom's Guide. I finished Rings of Power episode 5 and I am far different place than I was when I wrote my Rings of Power review. Amazon sent the press the first 2 episodes, and even though I wasn't a Lord of the Rings super fan, I found it interesting, was excited to watch a Prime Video series. Today, after watching the next 3 episodes, I'm itching to break glass and go with Galadriel's Elven Squad far, far away from the series. Yes, while Galadriel made the right call to keep the fight going, I wish I could bail on the story. But I'm going to be watching next week's episode and those thereafter. No, I'm not hate watching it, if such a thing exists. I'm not suffering to pull out the differences from Tolkien's work to Venn Online. I'm sojourning on, fighting a war against not watching. Really? Bro. Like, I watch it so I can create content around it and I can inform people and entertain. Don't put yourself through it. Galadriel just sucks. The show sucks. They picked the wrong protagonist and their writing is garbage. They could fix it though. I really think they could.
And next up today, the most insanely woke thing Jeremy has ever seen.
This might be the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Imagine a situation where you pay up to $2,500, I guess these woke white women do this, to sit at the table with a black woman who calls them racist for the entire dinner. That's literally what this show is. It's one of the most absurd things I've ever seen. Let's start with one of the articles. Shocking women chided for, quote, upholding supremacy in new Karen film. A group of white women was accused of upholding supremacy because they expressed shock over a racist encounter involving a black Lyft driver. Extraordinary scenes from a new documentary show. The Deconstructing Karen film centers around white women as they attend a bizarre dinner party in Denver, Colorado that's hosted by Race to Dinner co-founders Regina Jackson and I Don't Care. Jackson, who is black, and Rao, who is Indian American, launched their dinner party venture in 2019 as a way to inform white women how they are racist, often charging the groups $2,500 each. The documentary, which aired on Canada's CBC network Friday, filmed one of the events and promoted it as the wildest dinner party of their lives, as the white women were captured beating themselves up over how they handle racism. At one point during dinner, Rao told the guests how a black Lyft driver in Charleston, South Carolina, once told her to put her hands up and not make any trouble if they appeared to be pulled over by police. He actually told you that? Oh, God, that's insane. What? Complying with the police officer is insane? That's the way he lives. That's his reality. Jackson hit back. When the guest clarified she didn't mean the driver was insane, but rather the situation, Rao jumped back in and asked the group of white women to stop acting shocked, because that's a part of white feminism. Why are you telling us not to act the way if it's surprising? To me, that is surprising, another guest asked. Rao responded, because that holds up white supremacy. Being surprised is supremacist? When people of color tell you enough to tell you their story, believe us without expressing shock. When you express shock, it pushes away from the blame. What? You literally told them a story to shock them. The purpose of that story was to be shocking. I don't even understand. What? I legitimately don't understand. And first of all, who the heck is paying for this? Their husbands are probably paying for it. Probably. The guest hit back when Rao's justification made her very angry. Jackson then backed her co-host stance, telling dinner guests they don't expect a dang thing from white women because they've done nothing for her. Well, sounds like she's racist to me. I expect nothing of you because you've never given me anything. I can't trust you. So she's literally saying she has a mistrust for a group of people based on their skin color. I mean, I'm not making this up. This is a real TV show. One guest then questioned how could they come together when Jackson expressed so many sentiments asking, if we had a real heart-to-heart, you'd still never trust me? When the guest doubled down and asked if she'd ever trust a white woman throughout her life, Jackson responded, let me put it this way. The ones I have trusted have come back to disappoint me. The Deconstructing Karen documentary bills itself as delivering some cold, hard truth to white women as a way to inspire them to acknowledge their own racism and complicity in supremacy. You see, dear Race to Dinner co-founders, $2,500 needs to be reported to the IRS. The whole dinner thing has gotten on my last nerve. Swindlers, hustlers, Race to Dinner co-founders must all report their revenue. Here's a case of the pot calling the kettle black. Rao is from the upper caste name in India, and her forefathers were part of Hindu religions, caste hierarchy that subjected lower castes for thousands of years. If you look at their website, yes, they have a website. They have Race to Dinner. Let's go. Let's do this. Yes. Who wouldn't want to pay to have Regina Jackson and Saria Rao call you racist to your face? You know, based on nothing. You see, why liberal white women pay a lot of money to learn over dinner how they're racist? White woman tears for $2,500 a night. Like, these people are just like race hustlers, right? I mean, that's what they are. If they really cared, why aren't they just doing YouTube videos for free? Why are they making a TV show and charging money? I mean, this is like 8 women at a time, countless lives changed. You've changed nothing. In fact, you've just made, and here's some here, Deconstructing Karen's wokest moments. Okay, let's take a look at this clip quick. All right, so let's see what's going on here.
You know what I expect of white women? Not a damn thing. Nothing. I expect nothing of you because you have never given me anything.
Let me break that statement down. It's racist, okay? First of all, she treats an entire group of people, white women, as a monolith and says, well, I don't expect anything from you because you never gave me anything. So is the standard that we're setting here that whatever happens, whatever interaction I have with somebody who may be a different skin color or a different gender, if they haven't done anything for me, then I don't trust them. Is that the standard that we're supposed to be setting here?
I can't trust you, okay?
I am a liberal white woman. We are absolutely the most dangerous women out there. We are the most dangerous women that exist.
Are you serious? They paid $2,500 for this. They paid for this.
Because we want to think that we are better.
White women have abused us our whole lives. Why do we have to hold your hand? Can't we just tell you, hey, you guys have hurt us. This is what you've done. Now make it right.
Are you joking? First of all, what white women? Okay, are you just saying all of them have been mean to your entire life? And also, how would they make this right in your mind? Give you money? Is that what this is? Reparations?
have this discussion with people that I know, friends, lawyers, everybody, and they'll say, well, Regina, you know, there are some good white people. And I'll go, well, what have the good white people been doing for the last 450 years?
Are you kidding? Freeing the slaves? What are you talking about? Look at you. You're on TV. You have your own TV show. You're charging $2,500 a plate to morons. You have one of the best grifts on the planet, the race grift. You don't look like you're hurting for anything. And these dinner parties, like, here's this. These white progressive women pay top dollar to get scolded by a black woman for an hour. It's like an anti-racist dominatrix session. I don't even understand.
And next up today, SJW tried ruining dude's life and failed epically.
Well, this may just be the most epic SJW meltdown ever. I mean, it's got everything. It's got screeching. It's got brightly colored backpacks, children's backpacks on an adult. You've got all the hallmarks here of somebody who decided that they wanted to skip in line at a Walmart. And then when they get called out, their excuse is that they were R-worded, we'll say. Now, if that's true, maybe it explains some of this erratic behavior. That said, mental health is real, okay? This person is clearly, like, I know it's kind of fun to, like, meme on them because maybe they're just some, you know, lunatic. You could see a lot going on here. I'm not exactly sure. You see, if you needed any more confirmation that the political left is normalizing insanity within our society, just take a look at a recent epic meltdown by a woman who cut in line at Walmart and was called out by the guy behind her. Screaming like a mental patient is justified because she claims that she had, you know, been R-worded. Of course, she's also wearing a mask indoors. Note that the Walmart employees try to placate her instead of doing what they should have done, which is kicked her out of the building. The constant handholding of the mentally unstable and emotionally stunted people is surely bringing America down. I mean, I don't know. I don't really know. You see a lot of I love how the guy's in such disbelief that it's even real life. He audibly asks, is this a prank? This is a very interesting way to not take responsibility for cutting in front of somebody. Thank goodness those employees coddled her so she could continue with her meltdown. Here's an important lesson on timing. Had this gent simply uttered Trump at the right moment, he could have amped that cringe scream an octave or two higher and easily put himself into the meme hall of fame. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure that, like, not really anybody is buying this. Like, I assume that's a lot of upper arm definition for a woman. I'm just saying, I don't know anything. I'm not, you know, I see they're buying a thing of it's dog food and some liquor. Probably some more masks. You could see the way this woman's looking at her, like, what is going on? Like, the mentally unwell walk among us. That's for sure. Demons also walk among us. But it's like, I mean, I don't even understand. I mean,
I just asked her if she saw
anyone. Let's go. That's
adult.
I don't even understand. I mean, a lot of people, you know, I think the instinct is to show some level of compassion here and say, like, hey, you hope that they get some help. But it's also like, you wonder if they're actually telling the truth or if they're like legitimately this psychotic that they would say, like, what is that? First of all, I feel like there could be an innocent man in jail somewhere. I love the part where the guy shopper told the screamer, how do you assume my gender? You see this, a friend of mine has a teacher. She has a student who throws tantrums and breaks things all day at school, routinely causing classroom clears multiple times a day. Their mother raged at the school staff because we don't tell him no or don't and demand to speak to the principal. I'd pay real money for that entire footage. So the Walmart fools tell the guy who has done nothing to move on instead of just putting the lunatic out of the store. He said, I'm willing to wager a dollar to donut that she graduated or attended an American college recently. I don't envy any hiring manager trying to recruit employees. I mean, like, the way she is dressed is an indication. I mean, she's wearing a child's backpack, has big arm tattoos. I don't know if this person is trans or not. It looks like it could be a man, but I don't know. It's hard to tell. It's grainy footage. Obviously, if something like traumatic like that had happened to her, obviously that is terrible. But it seems unlikely. Now, Crowder was a little more raw, you know, like, I mean, I'm willing to at least accept the possibility. This article writes, as we get further past the original 15 days to flatten the curve, public shopping meltdown content is getting less frequent. However, when the internet gods bless us, the clips are more and more intense. Here is a nutter having a meltdown over a man who informed her that she cut in line. I mean, essentially, that's what it did. That's what happened. He told her, hey, you cut in line. And then she has perhaps the most insane meltdown imaginable. Congratulations are in order to the crazy lady. She's our new favorite Walmart meltdown. The previous title holder was a woman screaming about both how BLM and her P word mattered as she wrecked stuff. That woman had a better grasp of sanity than this new wackadoodle. I mean, it's not uncommon to have weird meltdowns. Like, you see here, she clearly needs professional help. Viral TikTok shows woman having meltdown after getting caught shoplifting. Like, I don't really understand, like, why are you stealing? You know, like, why in a modern era where you have so many cameras and so many ways to get caught? I think that, yes, mental health, mental illness is real. And we don't do a good enough job with helping people of that in this country. Many of our homeless population desperately need help. I see, you know, a new video every single day of some lunatic in the subway, going, just acting like a crazy person. But you know, this, I don't even understand how this happens, how you end up with so many people freaking out at Walmarts. I'm going to guess that this is probably not that uncommon. You see ground news. If you need a more confirmation, the political left is normalizing insanity within our society. Look at a recent epic meltdown. I'm assuming this is just a regular news article. Their bias doesn't seem to be managing. Now, I'm not exactly sure how people feel about her saying, oh, I skipped you in line. And so it's okay because I had this terrible thing happen to me. He obviously did not touch her. She claims that he did, but I'm sure he was recording because that's what you have to do. It's like body cams. If you're in a financial position to have a body cam, I wouldn't blame anyone for wearing one. Like, I'm dead serious. I mean, I guess you have your cell phone at all times, but sometimes you're not like ready to pull it out and get recording and things of that nature. But like, I don't really understand how we get here. I'm sure she's quadruple jabbed. I'm just saying for safety's sake. You know, one of the few still out there wearing masks in public and, You know, you see, woman has epic meltdown after, and she uses the R word as an excuse to cut in line. It could have just been a day. She could have just been having a day. But I don't like the implication that she, first of all, accused the man of touching her. Maybe that happened. Doesn't seem like it happened. She grabbed some of his stuff and threw it. This stuff really happened to me because I asked a woman if she somehow didn't see the line of people she just cut in at the register. Oh, this is the actual post. That's the actual post. 176,000 likes. Here's a local Facebook thread with the person in the video still falsely claiming that I put my hands on her. Luckily, a local employee explains what happened before I started recording, so nobody has to bother with whether or not they believe my side of the story or not. Look at that. She tried to ruin his life. Here's what she writes. What you don't effing see in the video is him physically assaulting me. Please take this down. Why? 2.3 million people have already seen it. You're famous. F you. I have effing PTSD. He touched me and he grabbed me. Also, not every day someone you know is a Karen of the month. F you. You're a damn lie. I watched the security footage and was there, and you pushed ahead of him and many others in line while stating, my life is busier than yours. Then you shoved your cart into his back and threw canned goods at the man. Whoa! Bombshell! Oopsie! Looks like the truth came out. And like the thing is, if this dude didn't record it, who knows? The court of public opinion would have came after him.
And next up, Netflix collapse incoming, 18 million customers set to cancel over price increase and woke trash.
Things are not looking good for Netflix. Maybe they should have focused on high quality content as opposed to, I don't know, pushing out agenda fulfilling garbage over the past couple of years. But it appears that people have finally reached the point where the product just isn't worth the price. And a new survey of just American customers show that Netflix is set to lose up to 18 million customers this year alone. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, including the fact that they're cracking down on passwords, the fact that they continually keep increasing the prices, but ultimately it becomes a value proposition. People don't think Netflix is worth the money, and this new survey is pretty rough. This is from the Sun US. Millions of Netflix fans said that they're going to quit the app this year due to soaring costs. A new study finds that users are ready to ditch the streaming service for a number of reasons, with the price hike being the top of the list. Well, I would assume so. This is, of course, something we've talked about on this channel for a very long time. The belt is getting tight. You know, people only have so much money to spend on entertainment. And as the price goes up and people realize, hey, maybe I haven't opened up Netflix in a while. It says a staggering 25% of the 1,000 Americans questioned said they plan to leave this year, according to the survey by reviews.org. Put to scale, that can mean a mind-boggling 18 million subscribers in the United States alone might cancel, which will cost the company $272 million. About 40% of those asked said that the recently announced price increase was the reason for saying goodbye. This comes, of course, as the Federal Reserve raised rates again, meaning many Americans will have to sacrifice non-essentials to live comfortably. And let's be honest, how many of you now, how many of you just watch YouTube videos now? And let's be honest, a lot of the shows that maybe you like find their way to YouTube or BitChute or all these sites anyway. I find myself watching a lot more Urban Rescue or it's when I have a half hour, 45 minutes at the end of the night, I used to throw on an episode of, I don't know, something, right? Something.exe. But now I'm like, yeah, we'll see what happened. Oh, Urban Rescue uploaded. I'll watch that. Good morning, everybody. Or like, I'll watch like, trucker vlogs or, tow truck driver vlogs or, you know, whatever the case may be. It's like, oh, this is a 20-minute video. I'll just watch this instead. Netflix is not alone in this decision. Amazon is among streaming services that also announced a price increase in the midst of inflation. In a blow to fans, Netflix announced earlier this year that it will charge users who share their passwords. Those who have access to the account of others now have to find alternative ways to stream their favorite shows. Now, look, I've never been like, I mean, I don't think that sharing passwords is, you know, should be expected, like, as a user of the service. Now, are you a mom? Are you a family? Do you have a family account and your kid moved away? You still want them to access your Netflix? I think that should be acceptable. Heck, even in my house here, because I have like primary internet and backup internet, sometimes it switches between them based on outages. And, you know, Hulu and Netflix flip out every time my IP address changes. I can only do it 6 times a year on Hulu before I have to call and spend 2 hours on the phone with them. That, of course, you know, I'm paying for it, but they still get mad. Netflix has already had a tough year, losing 1.2 million subscribers in the first quarter. It was also leaked earlier this year that Netflix is, quote, getting ads in October, which adds a more affordable option to access to streaming service. Maybe I'm just completely off board on this. Like, would that make you more likely to sign up for Netflix? I'm not sure that necessarily fixes anything. I don't really think that people are like rushing to watch ads. I mean, so many of my viewers, you know, I know like people skip ads or whatever. It is what it is. And I know that my viewers support me in other ways. Maybe they go to Coffee Brand Coffee and they pick up a bag of coffee, tea, or cocoa. They support in other ways. But are they going to do that for Netflix? No. And like, will they be able to get around it? Will people be able to skip ads there? You know, the plan could just cost just $7.99 a month, insiders revealed exclusively. You see, if Netflix is cheaper, really is the cheaper plan, would you purchase it? And I would say maybe it depends. You see, only 15%, so 85% of people said either probably not or it depends. I mean, you see, Netflix keeps raising its price. They release hundreds of TV shows and a year that flop. They cancel shows that people actually like, and they wonder why people are leaving. If Netflix focused on quality over quantity, this wouldn't happen. Well, I don't disagree with that. There's a lot of shows that, you know, Archive 81, I mean, I really liked it. I was like, oh, this is a unique thing. It's kind of spooky. I like where it's going. Huge cliffhanger. Can't wait for season 2. And it's canceled. There's that true crime thing that everybody loved. They canceled. There's, I mean, dozens of shows that seem to have loyal fandoms. It's like they either don't understand their actual customer base or, I mean, they're just hemorrhaging cash anyway. Netflix is awful. It used to be one of the only streaming services that offered such a wide range of content, but these days it looks more like the discount bin at 7-Eleven, and its originals are even worse. Once Stranger Things ends, I don't even see how Netflix survives. Well, they have some other shows that are pretty popular, you know, and they keep threatening that they're going to crack down on sharing accounts when there's no way to determine a household. They're becoming not even worth the hassle. Suspiciously, new news outlet owned by Rupert Murdoch goes after Netflix, no doubt because it's, quote, too woke. Okay, how about Barstool Sports? They're pretty apolitical. Netflix is sweating after millions of people have threatened to end their subscriptions after a recent price increase and the cost of living crisis, LOL, as if. I don't know why you say as if. Netflix is girl bossing a little too close to the sun. Of course, they've been slowly hiking up prices over the years, and with the latest subscription set at $13.99 and another increase coming, people are pissed. And I'm really seeing that they may make you pay for multiple TVs using your password, which is a real problem. In reality, I'm not sure who the F would ever get rid of their Netflix subscription. These streaming services have us by the balls. I subscribed to Discovery Plus the other day solely because I wanted to watch the Armie Hammer documentary, and now they've got me too. The Sun tweeting up a storm about all this stuff going on Netflix right now. Well, I mean, maybe you have more money than most people. It doesn't really take that much to cancel. And, you know, ideological reasons have led to people canceling, of course, and financial reasons. But if you look, I mean, again, there, I always talk about this all the time. At one point, you know, you got Netflix and Hulu because it was like $30 for both and you had everything and you were paying $110 for cable or whatever it is. Now you're paying $130 between Netflix, Hulu, Discovery, Peacock, Disney Plus. You know, you're paying $120 a month. And then also you're paying for your internet on top of that. You used to bundle internet and TV for sub $100 until all the stuff went away. You know, like, you see, not great, Bob. I wonder how much is really coming. This, the cost of living seemingly everywhere is a huge problem. Does that mean I'm going to sacrifice the one simple joy I have in life, watching hours and hours of TV inside of my apartment? I pay my entire net worth on every month. What's the point of living paycheck to paycheck if you can't at least enjoy yourself in the shoebox you pay for? I guess that's one way to call yourself a consumer, Kelly Kriegs. You know, you've saved the Sun. You see Forbes Disney surpasses Netflix subscriber count. What does this mean for investors? Not much, because most people keep more than one streaming service. But when you're talking about, you know, depending on the subscription plan, Hulu is getting a $1 to $2 base increase in price. Netflix also announced an increase in pricing with its basic plan increasing from $8.99 to $9.99. Standard tier from $13.99 to $15 a month, and 4K tier going up to $20 a month. The price increases are relatively low, but Netflix has more competition than ever. Well, it's because, I mean, people are just saying we're not, you know, people have one or two, but, you know, maybe they're finding more on Disney Plus. You know, most people use these streaming services for just filler in the background anyway. And with Netflix expanding their password sharing crackdown and all sorts of stuff like that, you have their chief accounting officer quitting after just 4 months. I think there's some big shakeups to happen at Netflix, and we're going to have to wait and see how it all happens. Maybe that means they'll return to quality, but I highly doubt it.
And last up today, instant regret. Woke CEO accidentally responds in the worst way possible after being exposed.
I don't really, you know, spend a lot of time on like hard political topics on this channel, but this is a particularly interesting topic. A group called Occupy Democrats, which seems to be some sort of nonprofit or charity that exclusively spams leftist propaganda, has called for, you know, Spotify boycotts of Joe Rogan and all this kind of stuff. Well, it looks like, I know this is probably going to shock a lot of you, massive corruption and what appears to be very suspicious use of hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the president's response, which has now been deleted, could not taste better. And we're going to get right into that. No sponsor. Just get right into it. Except I'm going to remind you that Coffee Brand Coffee is here. It's my coffee company. We have, for the holidays, pumpkin spice, spiked jack-o'-lanterns flying off the shelves right now. We have three delicious cocos, half a dozen teas. We've got coffee. We've got K-cups. We've got our Roaster's Choice program where you get a different roast every month, and next month is going to be absolutely delicious. I've seen what the next 3 months are, and took a while to pick them all out, but it's going to be really, really good. Our cold brew bags go like crazy. Give something a try, and you'll be supporting the channel. And I'll spend the money on putting it directly back into the company. Got my K-Cup machine on the way. I've got another dozen flavors of coffee, tea, and cocoa planned. Massive expansions for the holiday season. And haven't taken any money out of the company and don't plan to for a long time. So Occupy Democrats, by the way, promo code THEQUARTERING will save you today, by the way. You'll save money. Occupy Democrats demand Spotify quote, be boycotted after Joe Rogan says, quote, vote Republican. We saw this, of course, you know, go back to late August. Breaking, influential podcaster Joe Rogan ignorantly urges Americans to vote Republican as a form of supposed payback for business closing down during lockdowns. Dangerous rhetoric as the GOP embraces full fascism. Retweet to demand that Spotify drop Joe Rogan. And by the way, at the time, I don't know if this changed, 600 likes. Just like many of these bizarro shill companies, it's very curious, you know, very odd. You start to question where the money's going, right? Like, where's the money going? You have, by the way, you know, people dunking on them in their own replies, laughing at them. This is a company that has nearly 500,000 followers. Okay. Also following 25,000 people. I don't know why you would follow that. How could you possibly read what's going on in feeds if you're paying that, you know, if you're following that many people? But these are another one of these corporations that, in my opinion, just has a bunch of bot followers. I mean, you can see many tweets from them receiving, here's in a half an hour, 500,000 followers gets 100 likes. You know, here's 300. Occasionally they'll get big ones. They're a lot like that. Remember that Brooklyn Dad Defiant, and everyone thought he was just this organic Twitter personality that got really popular, and then it turned out he was getting paid and people were spending money to promote his tweets. Well, uncovered originally by Shoe on Head and Hamish Mitchell, you could see the Occupy Democrats Election Fund, Super PAC, which is what's used by all politicians on all ends to essentially scam money tax-free into their election stuff. The Occupy Democrats Election Fund PAC, run by Omar Rivero, raised $797,000 from 2021 to 2022. Now, PAC is for, you know, running elections, right? They contributed $0 to federal candidates. They also spent, quote, $577,000 on, quote, fundraising consultants. It gets better. It gets better. Part two, it turns out that $250,000 of the $797,000 went into a company owned by Omar and his brother. So they are taking tax-free donations in to their own corporation. Then they created, essentially as a shell, then they created this other company and just paid it out to themselves. And how does the owner respond to all of this? I'm dead serious. If you understood the time and effort that goes into making viral memes and the impact that they have, you might respect our work more. Are you serious? And you see, of course, Shu pointing out, you see Christina Pashaw, oh wow, I never would have guessed that this was a grift. It looks so legitimate. Omar Rivero, and he knows, says, why did you delete your tweet? And of course, he's been completely silent today. He tweeted 7 hours ago. I love this quote from Pete Buttigieg. By the way, 167,000 followers. Spends a lot of money on tweet engagement, it would appear. But a lot of the replies, interestingly enough, you know... Where's the money? You know, it's absolutely nuts. It's like people are so into the tribalism of their guy or their side that, like, if this is a Republican firm, by the way, I would be making the same video. It's absolutely ridiculous. This is why I don't donate money to politicians. Why is anybody donating money to politicians? They get plenty from corporations, right? Why did he delete that tweet, do you think? It looks like, to me, Do you see the irony in using political action committee to try to get rid of Citizens United? Omar replies, yes, I do. Whining, while Trump's True Social is banning users who post about J6 committee's public hearings, my new social network, Tribal, is encouraging users to post the truth about Trump. Yes, get on my partisan hack social media. That guy's a partisan hack. He's a partisan hack, has partisan hack social media. Get on my partisan hack social media. Again, the dudes that ran Occupy, who run Occupy Democrats, are under fire right now for pocketing PAC funds. And I'm screaming at the owners now, delete a response. You see, I can see Occupy Democrats are making the round once again with their demonic lib-brain BS. So I'd like to remind you that their account is literally run by investment bankers and landlords. When they write, a large Florida landlord announced that he will begin requiring all new existing tenants to provide proof of the poke. Like, liberals, when they find out that the policies they advocate for will also help the people they don't like. I mean, it's like the... And of course, it's hilarious. You see Hilaria Biden, a meme account on Twitter. For those of you who have been following the Omar Rivera Occupy Democrats big money for terrible memes drama, here's, if you understood the time and effort that goes into making viral memes, and they always do that, retweet if you agree. Begging for retweets is always hilarious. Here's him. The bottom line text is illegible. Very poor font color choice and layout. Just lazy. The right can't meme. I'm also available for hire. Trump sucks. Facebook memes. $677,892. Impunity. Priceless. Gets blocked. Here's Aiden Kearney. You're not good at lying or memes. You see Hamish, who exposed it. Why did you block me again, Omar? Do you not want to talk about the $250,000 of donation money your PAC received that you gave to Blue Deal LLC, the company owned by you and your brother? I mean, like, what? Like, Hamish. This information was from the Open Secrets website. I also went through their FEC filings and would urge anyone interested to do the same with a focus on their disbursements. I also did a search for contributions to candidates, and this came up. Nothing. Literally nothing. 3/4 of the money they raised was used to pay employees. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this. You can see the guy who runs Occupy Democrats is also apparently unfamiliar with his own group's legal structure. It's a hybrid PAC, which, unlike a super PAC, maintains a segregated bank account from which it can contribute directly to candidates. Oops! He called himself a super PAC, which means that they are legally prohibited from donating directly to candidates, except they aren't a super PAC, apparently. Isn't this like the other guys that Midas touch weirdos, too? And then the old... Guys, I think it's totally reasonable that Occupy Democrats takes donations and spends $700,000 on, quote, making memes. Here's their meme. Like, retweet if you agree. I mean, like, this is what they do. They make Facebook memes that are just screenshots of tweets or what, I mean, like, extremely low effort memes. And they're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they're not even good memes. That's the biggest crime here. Occupy Democrats pays $5,000 a month for a girl who struggles to produce left grade memes. Can't make this up. I couldn't tell you. Over the past 2 years, we haven't spent any money except for paying $5,000 a month to a graphic designer and $4,500 per month to a Twitter researcher, and a 15% commission to the fundraising firm. The rest is still in the account. I haven't earned a penny. Except what about the $250,000? Absolute hilarity. Completely expected. Stop donating money on either side of the aisle. I hope you enjoyed this video. If you did, make sure you leave a like on it, and we'll talk to you again real soon.